Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Welcome to our 100th episode.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, it's been going... When did we start this? 2021?
Yeah, 2021.
As you know, we take two movies with the same plot or premise, and this is definitely premise, and it's also kind of a fun episode.
Yeah, I feel like it's we're not going to get as much of a comparison as I was hoping for, but I think we'll make it work.
In this episode, we're covering off The American Tale from 1986, the year I was born, and Martin Scorsese's epic from 2002, Gangs of New York.
Yep, so these are both stories about young immigrants in New York, dealing with racism, xenophobia, and gang violence.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of them is a mouse.
Yeah. And one of them is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I had seen American Tale, and I've definitely seen American Tale, Pfeiffer Goes West.
Yeah, I've seen Pfeiffer Goes West way more than I've seen the original American
Tale. To the point where rewatching American Tale, a lot of the two movies had blended together in my memory.
Right.
It was the first time you saw Gangs in New York.
Yeah,
with your boy.
And I've discovered I really don't like it. Turns out I was right to not watch Gangs in New York all these years. I really did not enjoy the film, and I had to watch almost 3 hours of it.
Okay.
And if Scorsese had his say, I would have watched almost 4 hours of it.
American Tale is a classic. It is about some mice, but those mice are Russian Jews.
Yes, they are Russian Jewish mice.
Escaping from Russia because of the Cossacks. And going to America, the land where the streets are paved with cheese and there are no mice.
Oh, there are no cats.
Cats, sorry, yes.
Yes.
Because
the cats are helping the humans commit arson against the Jews.
Yeah.
This is the plot of American Tale. Sorry, I should probably say, because we do, you know, normally when we have child-friendly movies, we do child-friendly episodes. I want to stress that, yes, An American Tale is a child-friendly movie, but Gangs of New York absolutely is not.
Really? And this
will not be a child-friendly episode. But also, like, An American Tale is very dark.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly dark movie.
It does, We recently, the episode we recorded months ago with a friend of Lisa's back from university, Steve Hill, came out.
Yeah.
He's an Irishman living in Japan.
What's very funny is that, because he has a very long editing process and also is just a very busy guy. So yeah, was, I think, almost a year between when we recorded it, when it came out. And this episode that we're recording now is going to be out in about a month and a half because we're pre-recording some episodes. But for us, that episode just came out this week, and that was about Basil the Great Mouse Detective. And the fun thing about Basil the Great Mouse Detective and An American Tale is that they are two movies about mice living in the homes of humans that are their own counterpart, because the Mouskoviches, I don't know if you notice, are living under the home of a Jewish Russian family called the Moskoviches.
Yeah.
And they both came out in with a month apart in
1986. Yeah.
Which is crazy. Yeah. What a weird coincidence.
Yeah, I would like to ask you some questions.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's a different format.
Yes. So, as I mentioned, it was the first time you'd seen Gangs in New York.
True.
And you've already expressed the fact you didn't like it.
I did not like it.
Which aspect of the movie did you dislike the most?
Oh, the most.
Because I think this is going to really... like, obviously, there's a lot of hate towards the Irish.
Oh, yeah. I didn't... That's, you know, there was a lot of hate towards the Irish. Yeah. There still is in some places, so I get it. Like, I'm not going to dislike a movie because it's depicting hatred towards the Irish, because that's just historical fact. Though I will say that they committed hate crimes towards the Irish in the movie in terms of accents. probably the thing I liked the least about it is that the whole movie is building literally 3 hours. For 3 hours, you're building towards this one confrontation that's just really anticlimactic and boring. Like, why, if they were going to spend 3 hours building up to this confrontation, like, they should have at least made it interesting in some way.
Yeah.
Like, the guys don't even get to do the fight they want to do, and then they're like, oh, I guess we're just done. And it's like, excuse me, I've been watching this. I've given up so much of my life watch this stupid movie, and you can't even commit to the thing that you've been planning for 2.5 hours.
It does feel like Act 3 is the last book in a trilogy, and the author doesn't know how to end the story.
It's
and
just so sort of stupid. Gives up. Yeah, it just gives up. And, like, you know, fair enough, in an hour and a half long movie, if the rest of it was good, but the whole rest of it is just annoyingly spending stupid amounts of time building to this confrontation that just fizzles.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's a badly made movie. And I think I said to you that what I said to Nick as soon as the movie ended was, what I've come away from this movie with is that I have lost respect for Martin Scorsese. We're going to get so many people commenting on this who are just like in love with Scorsese being like blah, blah. I'll say I liked Hugo.
Fair enough.
That's a Scorsese movie that I liked. Hugo.
How did you feel about an actual Irishman not playing an Irishman who hates Irishmen?
That's bizarre. The only reason that annoyed me is because they made non-Irish people who couldn't do Irish accents play the Irish characters.
Yeah.
I will say, let me get this out here. There's one person doing a good performance in this movie, and it's Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah.
Great. He's great. Everything he does, 100%, I'm on board with it. Brendan Gleeson is the best cast in the whole movie. He's the only person doing a good job consistently. The rest of them, I don't know what they're smoking. And here's, a fun fact about me is that up until quite recently, I had never seen Daniel Day-Lewis in a film.
Yes.
And I will say that my experience, this is the second Daniel Day-Lewis film I've seen, and my experience is that he's very...
I thought it was the third.
What was the second one?
Didn't we watch There Will Be Blood, or am I...
I've never seen There Will Be Blood.
Oh, okay, I'm imagining.
We watched No Country for Old Men, which did not have him in it, but was released around the same time. We saw My Left Foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only performance I've seen from him before this one.
Fair enough.
And I will just say that, like, because people talk about him being, like, this, like, on this pedestal of, like, the greatest actor of all time or whatever, I just don't see it. He's underrated, and also then when you go in to read
underrated.
Oh, sorry, he's overrated. Thank you for correcting me on that. He's not...
One of the greatest actors of all time. He's underrated.
Absolutely not underrated. He's incredibly overrated, in my opinion. I know, I mean, people can recommend other Daniel Day-Lewis films to me, and maybe he's good in something, but not this. And also, like, reading anything about it, he just sounds like a dick to work with. He just sounds like your most horrible coworker who's not even doing a good job, but also, like, lording it over you and being an asshole and using... being like, I'm a method actor, I can be a dick to you all I want. Like, he's, like, acting in this role of, like, racist bad accent Brooklyn man while going to, like, restaurants during filming and acting like that towards waitresses. Like... What a dick. What an arsehole. Yeah. I'm sorry that he's Irish. Just revoke that citizenship. He's an absolute dick. And revoke Bono's while you're at it.
Yeah, I didn't mention Bono.
That was my other commentary, is that, like, at the end of the movie, they just launch into, like, this song written by U2 for the movie, which is garbage to the point that I muted it and started playing a horsewhip song over it, because the song they wrote is called, like, The Hands That Built America, and I was like, they could have just picked this horsewhip song called The Man Who Built America, which is a much better song.
Yep.
And it fits, like, 100%. Yeah, put that song in there.
Fun fact.
Then they would have done something good towards the end.
Lisa's dad went to high school, college, whatever you call it.
Are you going to say with Bono?
Yeah.
He didn't. Bono was younger than him, I believe. They lived on the same street.
Oh, okay.
So they used to play, like, football or whatever in the local green.
Fair enough. For those who live in urban areas, green is where the council haven't built stuff and there's a park there.
Yeah, it's not... Green is somewhere between patch of grass and park. It's like a patch of grass that's the size of a block.
Yeah.
That's a green.
Walking around Dublin, there was a lot of... Like, there's one really nice park. Was there two that we went past?
We did. We went to Merrion Square and Stephen's Green, which are both in the city centre and are, like, decent parks.
And now I understand why foxes still exist in the metropolitan area.
We also have... Dublin also has the largest... park? Is it just the largest? I think it's the largest national park in any city in Europe. Maybe in the world? I don't know.
Yeah, which we all also went to. Because it was by the zoo.
Yeah, the zoo was inside it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also so is the president, our little leprechaun man.
Yeah, the president and the zoo same place.
Michael D. Higgins lives in Orsanuk Tyrone.
Yeah.
That was another good bit in the movie, actually, is the bit where, like, Jim Broadbent went up to an Irish guy and tried to talk to him, and he was like, Níl Éisteacht an Gaeilge too, or whatever, or like, Níl Aon Gaeilge a good. Or he's asking, like, where he's just like, I don't know, do you speak any Irish? And then Jim Broadbent's like, do they not speak Irish here, or do they not speak English here anymore? And he was like, yeah, we do. He's like, oh, he's just being a dick for the fun of it, which is what most people use the Irish language for.
Talking of other Irish people.
Mm-hmm.
Liam Neeson.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you feel about his character? Because you were very confused.
I was confused because he was dressed like a priest but apparently had a son.
Yeah.
And that just wouldn't be a thing. But it turns out his name is Priest. To the point that, like, his tombstone just says Priest instead of a first name.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. Because I don't think it's supposed to be that his first name is actually Priest. I think it's supposed to be, like, his nickname is Priest. Like, you know, Brendan Gleeson's character's nickname is Monk.
Yeah.
But then why not put a first name?
William Cuddy is Bill the Butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But why not put his first name on his tombstone instead of just... By the way, do you know why this whole movie exists?
I don't know.
It's because Martin Scorsese, in like the 50s or whatever in New York, thought that the Italian-Americans were the only immigrants in New York. And then he discovered like an old... graveyard full of Irish graves from like the 1810s, and he was like, whoa, there were other immigrants here before before Italians? That's crazy. And that's the whole reason he made this movie. And then he wanted to make it in the 70s with Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi, and then Jim Belushi died.
Wow.
So it ended up
would
not
have been
getting...
a very weird movie.
It would have been a totally different movie. So that it didn't get made to the 2000s instead.
Okay, so pro on Gleeson, pro on Neeson.
Gleeson and Neeson.
Gleeson and Neeson.
That's what all names in Ireland are rhyme with Gleeson.
Yeah. We've already talked about Leo's terrible accent that comes and goes. Cameron Diaz.
What is she doing?
In the movie?
What is she doing?
Playing a character. I don't know. What answer do you want from me? You're talking about accent or just in general?
Both. I don't know. I mean, here's the one thing about her is that she does have an equivalent in an American Tale.
Yes.
Because there is an Irish mouse that they meet who, Tony, who is the Italian immigrant that Fifel meets, falls in love with. And in this case, you know, his friend who's shown him around also falls in love with the girl, but... Fifel in American Tale does not butt in and sleep with her.
Yeah.
Knowing that his friend is in love with her and then get betrayed by his friend because he slept with the girl that he was in love with.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in an American Tale.
Would that plotline have made the movie?
It would have been a very strange plotline.
Yeah, so that's... The Bill the Butcher character is supposed to be he's a cat pretending to be a rat who's supposed to be helping the immigrants, right? And there is a mixture of Irish, Italian, Russian Jews.
So you saw him as Butcher?
Yeah, very much so.
I saw him as Broadbent's character.
Tim Penny? No.
The guy from Tammany Hall. I can't remember the character's name. But, yeah, because he's like, you know, friend, you know, acting like friend to whoever, but he's really kind of two-faced and whatever. I guess he's kind of a combo of the two characters, because obviously he then does lead the cats to the mice to attack them. So that is kind of the butcher.
It's a very fascinating, like, because historically inaccurate, Gangs of New York is historically really inaccurate, but at the same time, it is very much it's talking about that period of time of, you know, the so-called natives of America being the grandchildren of the people who fought in the Revolutionary War.
Right.
And that sort of whole era. We have a little bit of that in American Tale, because the Statue of Liberté mm-hmm. is being constructed at the time.
Yeah, so these are set
by a French pigeon.
Played by Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
just to make things more confusing. I was going to say, yeah, we should really discuss time periods, because these are both 19th century, but they are actually set quite a bit apart. So Gangs of New York opens, I believe, in 1846, and then it cuts to 16 years later, so 1862. So most of the movie is between 1862 and 1863.
Yeah.
Whereas I believe An American Tale was set in 1885, yes. Is that right?
Yeah. Correct.
I'm glad that I remember that off the bat.
It's all right, I had it all up here.
Yeah. So there is...
We're in a fact check.
So there is about 20 years in the difference. And it's what's interesting to me is that in Gangs in New York, in the scenes from 1846, it's all, like, Irish immigrants who have come over already. Because he kind of says that he came over very young and doesn't remember Ireland.
Yeah.
And he's a child in, you know, in that. So they've been over for a few years by 1846. And then it's when they're in 1862, you see loads and loads of Irish people coming off the boat, the boats. But that feels off to me, because the famine was from 1845 to 1849. And that would have been the time when the hugest influx. So at the time where they're already settled is when there would have been the huge influx. And then the time in 1862, it doesn't feel like there should have been as much of an influx on people, you know, having this backlash against the Irish coming in, you know, being overrun by Irish people. But also there is what sadly is depicted in this movie, which does have basis in reality, is the extent to which some Irish immigrants were involved in racist activity against black people at the time.
Yeah.
And that was because, you know, the Irish and the blacks were seen as kind of the lowest rung of society, but black people could be slaves, whereas Irish people were getting jobs.
Yeah.
And with the abolition of slavery, suddenly the Irish and the black people were competing for the jobs.
Yep.
And then also, as seen in the movie, that, you know, a lot of Irish people were being conscripted into the Civil War.
Yeah.
Because they were the lowest economic rung, because they say it in, you know, the movie that you can basically pay to not be drafted.
Yeah.
So then there's kind of a blame on the free black people that, like, you know, you guys are the reason that we're being forced to go to war and stuff. Which is falsely placed blame.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not their fault.
I know it's silly, but there is so much within the political tones of Gangs in New York that is so similar today that it is actually bizarre. It's like almost like we don't learn anything ever.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you have people in power who are, you know, descendants of immigrants anyway, blaming migrants and immigrants for all the problems.
Mm.
And it is very much the very the very same sort of lead up that gave Adolf Hitler power in Germany when he was chancellor, because it was just like, well, our country's in the shit, and I'm going to make a scapegoat out of one particular group, and we will remove them from our society and then try and raise it up. For those, you know, obviously it'll now date the episode we're talking about, like this episode we're recording now, but with the massive crackdown on legal immigrants being deported out of America and judges trying to block this from happening without due process, and obviously it being overwritten and ICE basically doing whatever they want. Because the president is basically following in the same footsteps of trying to create an empire out of a republic, and trying to scapegoat everything onto, you know, a threat of his own making, and really just shooting everybody in the foot at the same time. And it is, I feel very sorry for the kids who are going to grow up and have to go to history class and learn, like, basically the last 20 years and try and, like, write essays about, like, the cause and effect of everything that has happened. You know, you go back to 1930, which was the same time that the American Republicans controlled both the presidency, the Senate, and Congress. And again, they thought protecting American jobs and manufacturing was a good idea, so they put tariffs on everybody. The tariffs caused Japan to realize, as an export country, they weren't going to survive and they had to build an empire. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in 1931, they invaded China. And then you get a few years later, well, a decade or so later, when they obviously attack Pearl Harbor and, you know, America's bought into World War II. Obviously, there was other stuff going on, and that's, you know, but it's like, cool, people listening to this, like, there is a very, very strong possibility we are literally watching the lead up to World War III. And it all starts with just a singular, like, poor election, scapegoating, like, tariffs are involved. Like, it's so ridiculous. You were talking yesterday that it could be possibly ChatGPT that have come up with these tariff numbers.
Yeah, that's a theory that I have seen online and does seem to hold some weight, because there is some evidence that is possible.
Yeah, there's been tariffs placed on uninhabitable islands that are only inhabited by penguins, so I guess the American people are now going to be paying extra for penguin shit. Yeah. There is an island that's had a tariff put on it that the only occupants are an American military base.
Yeah.
It is a very, very bizarre time we are living in.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of that reflected in gangs in New York, where you've got, you know, I don't care, you know, I'm going to get the people to vote. And, you know, there's the scene later on in the movie where they've won by like 3,000 votes. Well, they've won by so many votes that there's more votes coming in than there are actual.
So they've won by 3,000 more votes than there are registered voters.
Yeah.
Because part of what they were doing is they were sending the guys to the poll with their beards and then shaving them and sending them back.
Yeah.
Which I think is very funny.
And it was,
what a fun version of voter fraud.
Yeah. And it was one of the things that was highlighted within Trump's campaign of, like, this illegal immigrants voting, to the point where mobs, I wouldn't say militias, but mobs gathered around these groups. And it was very disturbing because there was some programs put in place where buses would go and pick up Native Americans who lived outside of large metropolis areas.
Yeah.
Gather them all up, put them on these buses and help them travel to vote.
Yeah.
And of course they were immediately hit with go back to your own country, and you're like, what, you're so unbelievably ignorant.
There's like there's a classic story of like a woman talking to her, like, on a train in the UK with her child, and her and her child are wearing like hijabs or some kind of headgear, and are speaking to each other in a language that's not English, and old racist white guy tells them we're in England, you should speak English.
Yeah.
And she turns around and says, we're in Wales, we're speaking Welsh. which I think is hilarious. Yeah. but very, you know, on the nose about how some people are in society. I've come back around on your point, and you're right, the rat, the cat pretending to be a rat is definitely Butcher, because he's committing extortion. He's extorting the immigrants, and that is what Butcher is doing. You know, you got to pay a tribute to him.
Yeah. He won a singular battle, declared himself the victor.
Yeah.
Killed the other leader. Emancipated his son and left him in a... I'm a little bit confused. It was a Protestant, Anglo-Protestant church, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously he would have been Catholic.
Yeah.
Because and then before he comes back is Amsterdam, 16 years later. I had a tangent and I've lost it now. I apologize. Continue what you were saying, Lisa.
That's all I was saying, is that they're both extorting the immigrants. Though I do think it's interesting when he comes back, how many people that he recognizes are on Butcher's side now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even the kid who helped him out, the equivalent of Tony. Johnny, is it, yeah, I think? Because he's also Irish in this one, as opposed to Tony, who's the Italian mouse in An American Tale, who helps Fievel. I mean, the one thing, there is a difference, obviously, in that Fievel is separated from his family and does eventually reunite with them.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, technically, Amsterdam is separated from his father, but he's separated by death.
Yeah.
And rather than, like, searching for his father, he's searching for...
Vengeance
for his father.
Yeah.
So there is, you know, a little bit of that. But there's also, you know, this theme, I think more so in American Tale, of which I think is very accurate, of immigrants having their names changed.
Yeah.
And it's, what's very funny to me is that they do have a scene, they gloss over, but they have a scene of the Moskoviches arriving at Ellis Island, and then they tell their name, and the guy's just like, whatever, might say something.
Yeah.
But I find that very funny, because I've been to Ellis Island, and I've looked at Ellis Island records for my family arriving, like cousins arriving in the States in the early 20th century, and their hometown is spelled like three different ways. And it's clearly just the Irish accent that they're trying to be like, oh, whatever. Oh, speaking of which, though, because that reminds me that I had forgotten entirely that Fievel's name gets changed to Philly.
Yeah.
And said by the, you know, Italian American mouse with the Bronx accent, and it just reminded me of, and I have gotten permission from my mother to say that her name is Phil.
Yeah.
And the son of one of these guys who went, you know, in the early 20th century, and cousins, who went to the States, so he was my granddad's first cousin, was, you know, from Queens and in the NYPD for years, and every time he would call our house, he'd go, Foley, how are you?
Yeah, yeah.
So every time this little Bronx mouse in this movie, he was like, Foley, Philly Moskovich. I was like, oh, what kind of, it just reminds me of our cousin. I just genuinely hadn't remembered that being a thing. But also, the reason that he's called that, it was not in the script to change Fievel's name to Philly, but the kid who played him, his name is Philip Glasser.
Yeah.
And when he was only 7 years old when he recorded the lines for the film, and his grandmother would remind him to work on his lines every day when she dropped him off at the studio. So his grandmother would bring him to the studio, and she'd go, hey, Philly, time to learn your lines. And that's why they were like, oh, please, let's just do that. Let's just put that into the script, that like she calls him Philly, or that Tony calls him Philly. So I love that it came from like an actual just New York lady calling her grandson Philly.
The one part of historical inaccuracy I'd like to bring attention to, there is a lot of Chinese immigrants in Gangs in New York.
Oh, right, yeah.
In American Tale, they're all sort of, I don't feasibly, because they're all leaving via Munich, right? They're all in Germany. Yes,
they do. So apparently there was a planned sequence of them getting, you know, across Europe to Germany, but it was cut for time. But yeah, so they flee Russia and the Cossacks, and they go to Germany and get passage on a ship from Germany.
The historical irony of that. Anyway, fleeing to Germany.
Yeah, this is the 1880s. Yeah. So,
because in the movie there's a lot of Chinese influence outside of just like the Five Points, which is like where all the streets all meet.
Same in an American Tale.
Well, because in the American Tale there's there are obviously Russian Jews, there's Italians. There's Irish. The era of the Chinese massing in America was, like, way off.
It was about 10 years off, I think.
Yeah, because it's not until 1869 when they were basically employed to build the railway.
Yeah, so the Chinese theater wasn't built for 1869, but in Gangster New York, they're, like, in it in 1862.
Yeah.
And there's there's so many Chinese immigrants in Gangs in New York who just weren't there at that time. There probably would have been a handful, but not to the extent.
Not to the point where they had their own community.
There definitely would have been a lot of Irish at that time.
Yeah. It's, I don't think, what were we watching? We must have done it. We watched a thing about deep dive on, like, Chinatown being basically a fabricated thing. Because it was all built by the council as like an attraction, and that's sort of also a slum where they just shoved all the Chinese people in.
Which city?
Is it LA? I don't know where.
There's a big Chinatown. There's Chinatown in a lot of places, and there's also like little Tokyo in a few places.
Yeah.
There's a big Chinatown in LA.
Yeah.
Or is it? Oh, sorry, it might be San Francisco. Definitely in California. Is it San Francisco?
I'm not sure.
Either San Francisco or LA, there's like a huge Chinatown.
But like all of the facades of the buildings were all built intentionally to really like make it obvious that you're in Chinatown.
Yeah.
So it's very, because obviously they would have arrived from east to west while building the railway, and then arrived all in California at the same time as everybody else did. It's a very... American history, when it comes to immigration, is fascinating because the entire country is a country of immigrants.
It's a real melting pot group, of...
The one group that basically have no representation.
The Native Americans?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also very fascinating about the... For those who haven't seen it, The Big Short's about like gambling on the stock market and causing things to collapse so you and your buddies are richer.
Basically,
there's a very interesting fact about the English and Native Americans, because when they originally, when America was originally in it was very mixed. Obviously, there was like Mexico was controlled a lot, and Texas was its own place, and blah 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 blah. The English had a treaty and an agreement and contractual obligations with Native Americans and how much space they took. And all that shit went out the window when they lost the Revolutionary War. And of course, those treaties and territories were not upheld by the new American government. Mm. So it's a very... And learning the history of that was fascinating, because they were just like, cool, we've lost, but...
Yeah. There's also, like, a huge link between the Irish and Native Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you're aware of that. The Choctaw people sent $170 to Ireland, to the people of Ireland, in the 1840s, because no one else was helping us with the famine.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll say this on here. I know we definitely have lots of Irish listeners, but for anyone who's listening who's not Irish, doesn't know the history of Ireland, there is kind of a generalization outside of Ireland that the famine was just potato crops failed, and then the Irish didn't know how to eat anything but potatoes, so they all died.
Yeah.
It was systemic genocide.
Yeah.
So what happened was, at that time, Ireland was occupied by the British and had become part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland.
Yeah.
and Irish farmers were working very hard, and everything that they were creating was immediately being sent to the UK or to English landowners in Ireland.
Yeah, because that was the other thing. It was it's very much along the lines of, even though you worked the land and lived on the land, it was controlled and owned by Irish landlords. English landlords. So even though, because it was like you were still like, other than, because the reason that the potato famine was such an effective, well, not effective, sorry, that's not the right word, so a devastating blow to the Irish people is because it was the only thing.
It was one of the only crops that the Irish people were allowed to actually keep for themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Ireland is a huge exporter of beef, of dairy, yep. You know, pork. Pork was a huge thing. Because I know Americans tend to think, like, corned beef was a real thing in Ireland, but Irish people couldn't afford beef, even though they were, you know, full, like, they were farming beef and dairy. Yeah. So pork was the main meat that Irish people were getting. So there's, like, when Irish immigrants were in the United States, they did take on this idea of having corned beef and cabbage, but in Ireland it's all, like, pork dishes. Everything's pork-based. And, yeah, the you know, there was huge taxes, obviously, on the, you know, like, in terms of, like, the goods and things. And it was all going to the English landowners and over to the UK as exports. And no relief was given for that. Our population went from 8 million down to 3 million people in 5 years, which is awful. Yeah. And the Choctaw peoples sent, you know, what money they could grab together from the Choctaw Nation in the United States and sent it to the Irish people to try and give them some relief. And they were, you know, one of the only people who did. That was mainly because they had had the Trial of Tears, where a lot of their people had starved. So they understood. But, like, in the meantime, and, you know, when there's been troubles in, you know, that the Choctaw people have had, Ireland has come together to send them stuff. And I think both, like, the Choctaw and Ireland have, like, statues dedicated to each other and to the relief that we've offered each other over the years. So there is, like, a huge, and, you know, and this is around the time of that, because obviously it started, you know, I think it was 18, you know, so in the 1840s, maybe 1847. And, obviously, this film starts in 1846 and then it's in, you know, 1862. So, like, in that time period, there was a huge connection between Native Americans and the Irish.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Not that it's very relevant to the movie, but...
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a, you know, very, very... Well, all of history is continuous, I think.
Mm.
It's be very difficult to pinpoint a time in the entire planet where everyone was actually succeeding in what they wanted.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you're Western, you think about the Western history and, like, the boom that came after World War II and then, you know, blah, blah, blah.
And then you think about, hey, how was Japan during that time?
Yeah, yeah.
Not great.
And same with Germany as well. Like, it's in Russia and all the people that were basically seconded into being part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
To the point where we've come back to it, where the Soviet Union is, Federation are trying to rebuild the Soviet Union with Ponzi elections and, you know, I'm not saying that the new prime minister / president, I can't remember, of Belarus is a Russian asset, but I'm not also not saying it. You know, this very much a push, which does feel like a very, why does that matter, of Putin basically saying we will come to a peace deal only when there's an election in Ukraine. It's like, cool, so you're afraid of the God... Well, why? Why is that the focus? It's not like, oh, we'll stop bombing civilians with drone strikes.
Yeah.
No, it's about getting somebody elected.
Yeah.
who maybe, you know,
it's will like, hand over their country.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, we now live in an, you know, an age of information where everyone knows what's going on everywhere else. So they know that there are cats in America, and that's not a place they can flee to be safe. Yeah. there in fact are horrible cats in America at the moment. Not, let me caveat and say I love cats. Yeah. The cats in this case are a metaphor for something nastier. You know, racists and people who are going to deliberately extort the vulnerable, and people who are going to be violent towards people because of their race or ethnic background or where they were born or what their religion is.
Yeah, it's definitely very much like what I said earlier. It's very much like if you put a group of people in the boogeyman pile, and therefore people will go out of their way to try and help the evil ideal that you're being fed. You know, when you have teachers calling ICE on the students in your own classroom because you're racist and you don't want to be teaching non-white children. When you have fathers who are citizens of the country being put in prison with a bunch of violent gang members, you know, ignoring the fact that he had ID proving that he wasn't a immigrant or a migrant, illegal or otherwise, you sort of feel like, cool, what step are we away from putting people in camps? Oh, wait, we're already there. Like, you know, and it's been ongoing for a long time. China, for an example, treat people having religion as a mental illness. And there are, I think, about 3 million practicing Muslims in China that are literally in concentration camps. But obviously no one cares as long as you trade with China. There are more slaves alive now than there ever has been in history.
You look at the camps in Australia
they're not in Australia. That's how they get away with it.
No, I was going to talk about ones in the past. That the reason that there has been controversy around that is that there were these camps in Australia for interning immigrants who were, you know, thought to be illegal immigrants or whatever, and they accidentally imprisoned an Australian woman. An Australian citizen who had been born and raised in Australia and just had mental health concerns. And they caught her with some immigrants and then imprisoned her, and she couldn't get help for a long time. And then, you know, white Australian woman in your immigrant, you know, camps suddenly draws attention to the fact that you actually have camps for immigrants in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, so they didn't actually get rid of the camps. They just moved them.
Oh, yeah.
They're now in Southeast Asia and not technically in mainland Australia, but they still exist. Time is circular, folks. It's kind of shit because you defund education, you don't teach to the next generation the mistakes that the previous generation makes, they make the same mistakes again, and we end up going backwards rather than progressing, because, you know, this whole, you know, in the future we'll have flying cars. It's like, maybe some people will.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have millionaires and billionaires who have their own private planes because they don't like other people flying around and then criticizing the general public for not being eco enough.
Yeah.
Nothing we buy, like, you have to be very... You'd have to be a very, very independently wealthy person to actually live eco-positively, because nothing, you can't make anything in the modern world that isn't made by some form of slavery.
Yep.
You know, your phone, the device you're listening to right now, you know, despite it maybe, you know, this brand or this brand, they're all made by children, they're all made in factories. And then you have to think of where the minerals that those chips and boards are all made out of comes from. And you end up back at slavery again.
Yeah. If you want more on this topic, I recommend watching The Good Place.
Yeah.
What an incredible show.
Yeah.
But it definitely delves into this and you're just like, wow, there's no way to live ethically. But also gives the argument of that doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
Yeah.
You know? Because there obviously is, you know, you can get overwhelmed with that kind of stuff and be like, well, then what's the point in me even, you know, making small steps or whatever. And I get that from people sometimes that like, you know, because I'm vegan. And sometimes people are like, oh yeah, you're making a huge difference. And it's like, I'm doing the little bit that I can.
Yeah.
And when I can find ways to actually like do something that's going to make a difference, I will do it.
It's very much like my standpoint of not supporting Nestle.
Yeah.
Trying not to eat and buy products that contain palm oil. Because it just helps the continuous deforestation of the Amazon, because it's basically giving those farmers the only money crop. So therefore, you know, you can't blame the farmer. You have to blame the things put in place to export them.
Yeah.
I've been warning people for years about the price of chocolate and coffee going up, and it's gone from like a everyday thing and eventually will become a luxury.
Yeah.
Say, probably about 25 years from now, because one, those countries that where the money is being ethically sourced, the cocoa and the coffee beans are being ethically sourced from, they're getting their shit together, they're then having to pay people like, you know, minimum wage and not keeping them as slaves. And of course, the environmental changes of what everything else everybody else is doing is causing those areas to get less water. Yeah. So therefore, habitat where those plants that grow so prolifically that they can be as cheap as they are when you go to the supermarket are getting smaller and smaller. So it's all very much a combination of, like, there was a point in time where lobster was fed to prisoners because it's just sea bugs.
Yeah.
And now you pay market value if you went to a restaurant, which is the price constantly fluctuates. Mm. You can do two things, which is go, it's too hard, I can't solve it, I give up, I'm just going to be part of the pack. Or you say, no, I'm going to make as many very small choices as I can to not do it.
Yeah.
The other argument, of course, of like, people love to use oat milk as a anti-plant-based milk thing. And I agree, oat milk is really, really bad for the environment. Almonds.
I was like, I deliberately switched from almond to oat because were the problem.
Almond milk.
Yeah.
Because almonds contain, like, singular almond plants require, like, ridiculous amounts of water.
Yeah. Because I do drink plant-based milk, and I've done my best to be as ethically sourced. So I drink plant-based milk that is oat milk made by a company in New Zealand using New Zealand grown oats, and they originally were not able to process in New Zealand, but they now have a processing plant in New Zealand, so they were growing the oats here and processing the oats here, so there's no carbon footprint. Oh yeah, I mean there's carbon footprint, but there's not the like carbon footprint of planes flying the produce around. And they use like recyclable materials in their packaging, and you know, and it's a, you know, just trying to like be as ethical and as environmentally friendly as possible. Whereas almonds, like, just like everything about it is bad. The amount of water used, but also like the places where they're grown is, you know, using slave labor, and it's not great. Because almond milk is not something that I've really bought a lot of in my life. I used to use rice milk, but I believe that the amount of water used for rice is a lot higher than the amount of water used for oats as well.
Yeah.
But it's still like, it's not perfect. But then also, you know, if you're drinking cow milk, you've got the, you know, debating whether it's ethical to be farming milk from cows, which varies hugely from country to country and the way things are processed, and and I probably would have been okay drinking cow milk here in New Zealand or in Ireland, whereas I definitely would not want to in the United States, because I've seen what a lot of the factory farming is like over there. But then also, the amount of methane produced by the amount of cows that we have on the planet,
yeah.
and the amount of land and like good land that could be used for crops that is used for grass pastures for cows
yeah.
is ridiculous when, like, if all of that was used to grow food that could then be given to people in, you know, who are going hungry.
Because that's the other issue. The other issue is that like, we actually produce way more food than there are people, and yeah. everyone could actually eat, hypothetically, mm-hmm. but the problem is that it all comes from an economic and transport-based yeah. thing.
And we also use a company called Wonky Box,
yeah.
who are all around New Zealand, and I'm sure there's equivalents in other countries, who get the leftover produce from local farms that are too ugly or too small or too big or whatever to yeah. go into supermarkets. So the supermarkets are rejecting these produce. And normally they would just go to waste.
Yeah.
So we, rather than like, you know, going to the supermarket and buying the overpriced groceries in the supermarket all the time, we get, you know, a regular subscription of these vegetables that would otherwise be just being thrown out.
It's also fascinating to me because I don't know what the rest of the world is because I'm not shopping there, but the government at the moment is very much focused on this massive monopoly that the supermarkets hold and the fact that they're mm-hmm. basically...
In New Zealand, yeah.
Which is basically doing the exact same thing oil companies do,
yeah.
which is they manipulate their own prices so you, the consumer, end up paying mm-hmm. more and they get more profit mm-hmm. out of it.
That's also what the dairy industry in New Zealand is like.
Oh, yeah, it's...
Everything's owned by Fonterra.
Yeah, and that is one of the bigger issues.
Who have the largest carbon footprint by a ridiculous amount yeah, in the country.
Yeah, you could spend your entire life never producing any positive carbon impact and you'd still never undo anything that they do on a daily basis.
Yeah, you can live your whole life 10 times over, even like not caring about your carbon footprint and not produce what they produce in 1 year.
Yeah. And the great part about it, it's all subsidized by the New Zealand taxpayer.
Woohoo!
Because it is cheaper to buy New Zealand dairy products in other countries than it is in New Zealand. But what I was saying is that the government's now focusing on the monopoly because we don't have any... We have cheap supermarkets, but they all end up being fined. There was a couple of them that were just fined recently because they're violating consumer law by charging people more, you know, putting sales prices that are actually higher than the regular price, and of course legally you have to give people the lower price, but of course you're getting, when you go and you scan the till, unless you're actually, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, most of the time you don't like keep the 15, 20, 30, 100 items you've got in your head with the exact, you know, most people don't walk around with calculators and Excel spreadsheets while they do shopping,
mm-hmm.
Doing the actual maths at the time. Like I used to, when I was studying and didn't have any money, I would literally be having a running count in my head, based on what I was buying. And Wonky Box has made me realize that the produce you get from the supermarket is actually garbage 90% of the time.
Yep.
Unless the food is in season, it is imported, it is shipped, it is from somewhere else.
Yep. And we do have a local greengrocer that I go to occasionally, mainly to get broccoli, because they always seem to have the most incredible broccoli
it's
there.
It's amazing.
At least twice the size of what you get.
The same price, yeah.
Or cheaper.
And... You know, in the long run, this is what's causing people to migrate places because you have these giant, like the school food issue at the moment, which has taken, the government has basically taken jobs away from, you know, New Zealand small business and given it to these massive multi-international corporations
mm-hmm.
who are now not providing the children nutrition based on the fact that, you know, to me, it doesn't make any sense because if you were the idea that to me is what I thought their party was about, which was the taxpayers are a resource. We have to make more taxpayers so therefore we can keep the country going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, New Zealand has, like, very small nations. We have a lot of brain drain where you get educated in the country. you realize you have a massive student loan, you realize you're getting paid under market mm-hmm. value, and you move overseas. It's been happening since the 80s in New Zealand, to the point where then now people who have ever come back to New Zealand are instantly arrested and have to either pay back basically everything that up to the point where they left, or they go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
There was a case of it recently where a guy came back for a funeral and literally getting off the plane and going through border security, he was arrested on site, and the family ended up having to pay a very large percentage of the tax, the interest that he owed before he was released out of prison,
right,
which is not ideal for them, but also pay your fucking money back. You borrowed off the taxpayer. Mm. So no sympathy on my part, because I paid my student loan back. And that is why you get a lot of migration. And, you know, these movies focus on migration of, you know, for them as prosecution. For the Irish, it was very much, they didn't own their own country until the Revolutionary War. The fact that, you know, that whole era of, you know, migrating to America due to the famine.
Yeah, and Brendan Gleeson's character, the monk, does say to Amsterdam at one point that, you know, they did face all this anti-Irish sentiment in Ireland, and there was this fighting, whatever, you know, and the British were oppressing them, and he said, like, we never expected it to follow, we didn't expect it to follow us here.
Let alone be waiting for us when we stood off the boat.
So it's this idea that they were trying to escape oppressors, and then they arrived and discovered it was already waiting for them when they got there, which is exactly what An American Tale is about.
Yeah, 100%.
That they were trying to get away from this oppression and you know, systemic racism and things, and then they arrived in the United States, they arrived in New York, and just, like, even at Ellis Island, we're getting, you know, casual racism, where they were like, I can't pronounce your name, so I'm just going to call you. Because, like, Tanya, they're like, Tilly.
Yeah.
You know, which is how she figures out, you know, who Fievel is, or where Fievel is later, because she heard someone calling for Philly Mouskovich, and she's like, well, they called me Tilly. Maybe they changed Fievel to Philly. And it's funny, because we talked about the historical accuracies and inaccuracies of gangs in New York.
But we haven't touched on American Tale.
American Tale, do you know who Fievel is named after?
No.
Steven Spielberg's grandfather was a European Jew. I don't know if he was Russian Jew, who came to New York around that time period, and his name was Fievel. And there's scenes in there that are based on his stories of his childhood. Like, for example, there's a scene where Fievel is, like, looking in at kids going to school when he's trying to, like, figure out where he is and what's going on, where he needs to go. And that was based on stories from Steven Spielberg's grandfather, who said that, you know, he had to, like, the Jewish kids used to sit out on the street and look through the window or try and listen at the window to see if they could hear the lessons, because they weren't allowed in the schools.
Yeah.
And also, even though I've told the story of how Fievel came to be known as Philly in the thing, and that was partly because Don Bluth thought that kids wouldn't be able to pronounce Fievel.
Mm.
So he didn't want to make a confusing foreign name for them, which is ironic considering the plot of the movie.
Yeah.
Fievel was Steven Spielberg's grandfather's Yiddish name, and the anglicized name he went by when he came to America was Philip.
Right.
So, like, so he was a Fievel who became a Philly.
The other random disgusting fact I learned while we were in Ireland and doing that tour. Other than the boy who was 4 years old who was begging, which the British government had made begging illegal, was the
British
prison.
The British government made begging illegal during the famine.
it was the soup, the communal soup thing,
right?
Where you had to anglicize your own name.
Yeah.
So literally, to survive, you had to destroy who you were.
Yeah.
And it is such a, like, I went from being empathetic about British rule in Ireland, and obviously, you know, we get taught a lot of stuff in New Zealand about the land wars and stuff like that.
You were, like, raging when we came out of that tour.
Yeah,
you were so angry. I think the story about the kid really, really got to you, that they arrested a child. I think a 3-year-old. They arrested a 3-year-old orphan for begging.
Yeah.
When the child had no way of even understanding that there was that they had enforced a law against begging.
Yeah.
Literally begging for food. A 3-year-old. During a famine. And was just thrown in prison with all the adults.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
And this is what they were leaving to find, you know, the stuff in the new world, the promised land of America, and just arrive there to discover that they were going to get the same shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. In both movies, that's depicted, you know. And the Moskoviches do kind of accept it a little bit more freely because at least their house isn't getting burned down. But then the cats do commit arson again.
Yeah.
The cats love committing arson in this movie. But also both films do kind of culminate in a big battle between cats and mice, which is not what it is in Gangs of New York, but between the two sides, the two gangs, kind of, even though they're not really supposed to be a gang in American Tale. I think the cats are supposed to be a gang, but the mice aren't really supposed to be a gang. They're supposed to be, you know, the kind of underdogs. And it's all, you know, an idea by the lead character, so Amsterdam or Fievel, to stand up to them and say, no, we're standing our ground, we're here, we're still, you know, you think that you've squashed us down, but we're still here and we're still going to be here. And in one that's, you know, going out and having a gang war in the middle of the draft riots. And in the other, that's creating a mechanical giant mouse of Minsk to scare all the cats off the pier onto a boat going to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay. Honestly, a better climax Amsterdam and the Butcher.
As we're sort of getting to the wrap-up and trivia era part of our podcast, I was going to go full circle back to that last sequence.
Yeah.
So historically inaccurate timings, right?
Yeah.
Because
Butcher was a real guy.
Yeah,
but he was dead long before these riots.
Riot, yeah. So obviously the people are pissed off that because the draft has come through, people are getting drafted, and there's a riot about it. The natives are very much not supportive of Lincoln in the first place, so obviously there was a lot of hatred. And
to clarify, the natives, again, is these, like, people who are, like, the grandchildren of the original, the people who fought in the Revolutionary War. They're not Native Americans.
Yeah.
Because I found that very confusing in the movie.
And, yeah, you have the sequence where they sort of, like, the riots going on, people are getting shot in the street by the Union soldiers.
Yep.
You know, the Dead Rabbits, who's Leo's gang and the natives join together and they're going to have a fight. And then they just get shelled from the ocean by a battleship. And, you know, you get this huge lead up and then they just like hear a whistling and they all stare up and then everybody starts exploding. And then the bit that I found really jarring, which I hadn't noticed, and it may be because I'm watching a lot more movies, other than not a lot more movies, I think I'm just watching movies with a more critical eye rather than lol, fun thing happening on screen, eat food. You know, when I'm actually deep diving and actually remembering detail. Bill, like, turns into, like, a shadow demon because, like, the dust level varies depending on scene by scene. From where Leo is basically alone in a cloud of dust, like, pointing his weapons out in directions, trying to find where Bill is. And then he just comes running from a random angle and, like, slices a part of him and then disappears again.
Yeah.
Which is very much like horror movie rather than, like, you know,
And he's, like, slicing the backs of his knees and things.
Yeah. And then, like, depending on where the angle changes, the smoke's way less.
Right.
And then, obviously, there's another explosion and they end up, like, being face-to-face with either, and, you know, they end up, you know, Leo kills Daniel and they bury him and that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you are right. It's very much like...
Also, Jenny is planning to get on a boat from New York to California.
Yeah.
And then someone, like, mugs her And then she's like, oh, screw this, and goes back.
Yeah.
I don't understand any of her character's motivations throughout the movie.
I'm assuming there was a blockade. Like, they couldn't leave. I think, like, they were, like, not grounded, but they would be.
But they didn't even show that.
Yeah, yeah.
She, like, wrestled her way through the crowds to get to there, and then was like, oh, never mind, I'm going to go back, even though I told them I was leaving him and never going to see him again. And didn't want to be around for these fights. And also, like, there's an implication that the butcher impregnated her when she was 12 years old.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
And then he wouldn't have sex with her again because she got scarred because he had to cut out the baby.
Yeah.
What the fuck? And everything about her, every time you learn anything about her character, it's horrifying. And also, like, the whole time she's delivering all these lines with this awful non-accent, so it makes it 10 times worse.
Do you want to get into some trivia?
Sure, we can get into some trivia. I've already talked about Steven Spielberg's grandfather. Philip Glasser, who played Fievel, was discovered by accident. He didn't audition for the role. He was auditioning for an Oscar Mayer commercial, and Don Bluth overheard the audition and was like, that's the kid we need for this. He did also go on to be in other Don Bluth productions, because he was in The Secret of Nim 2. The Statue of Liberty, this isn't really like trivia, but I just liked it, and it was mentioned, so I was like, oh, I'll bring that up as well. It's fun because it is copper.
Yeah.
And it like is in that color, and it didn't turn green and oxidize until 1900, so it makes sense that 1985 is that. This was Spielberg's first animated feature. We have already talked about one of his other future ones, which was We're Back, A Dinosaur Story. But it really took him a long time to understand that him being like, oh, let's add this 2-minute scene, meant that dozens of people had to do extra works for months. And so in 1985, like in the middle of production, he said, at this point, I'm enlightened, but I still can't believe it's so complicated.
Yeah.
Also, Don Bluth had decided to make a shift in style, so he wanted to get away from the kind of modern angular styles of animation at the time and go to a style similar to like the 1940s Disney animation, where everything is like softer and feels cuddly. He got praised by a lot of critics for the old-fashioned style and how the film looked and felt, because it was during a period when there was like a really high market for nostalgia, among baby boomers primarily, because at that point they were looking for products for their children that reminded them of the films they saw in their childhood, which makes sense. And so this came out like a few years before Disney had their Disney Renaissance of movies. For Gangs of New York, I took this down. I'm going to read this to you. Oh, no, I don't want to read it all because it's too long. But it was saying that, like, they really try to pay attention to the speech of the characters because the loyalties of the characters are revealed by their accents.
Right.
So they did have a voice coach who tried to resist having, like, generic Irish brogue and focus on, like, particular dialects.
Right.
And he did deliberately create an accent for Leo DiCaprio because he was supposed to be born in Ireland but raised in the States and have like a blend, half Americanized accent. I don't think that makes his accent forgivable. I think he still did a bad job of it. And also, so the Yankee nativists, so Danny DeLuise's character, they studied old poems, ballads, and newspaper articles, and particularly they had an 1892 wax cylinder recording of Walt Whitman reciting lines of his poem, of one of his poems. So a lot of Daniel Day-Lewis's accent is based on this old recording of Walt Whitman and how he pronounced words.
Okay.
Because that was what they thought that, you know, 19th century New Yorkers probably sounded like. So they tried, but like, I don't think Leo did a good job, and certainly Cameron Diaz never says anything that sounds Irish in the whole movie. There was something that Leo said, I don't remember what it was, but he had like one sentence that was only like 3 words where I was like, oh, he did it. He got an Irish accent for those 3 words. Daniel Day-Lewis, so this is, I've already told you about that he was treating waitresses like shit and stuff because he was in character, but he also became ill while filming. and was prescribed antibiotics. And then he was like, antibiotics weren't invented by 1860s, so I can't take those, and refused to take antibiotics because he wanted to stay in character.
Classic.
He should have just died of tuberculosis then. Yeah. Stay in character, go for it. It's like, you should be like, hey, if you want a method act, how about we really stab you and shoot you? We don't need props. Let's just actually shoot you and stab you, and then see, and then we can get your death on camera, and then will you be able to do the next film? No, idiot. During the riot scene, there's loads of interjections of art showing the riot violence. Those are actual period art pieces that were drawn by reporters during and after the riots. So right. They were published in papers at the time. This is the quote from Martin Scorsese. So he grew up in Manhattan in the 1950s. And then he suddenly realized, he grew up in Little Italy in Manhattan. Yeah. And then he suddenly realized that there were parts of the neighborhood that were older than the rest and had like tombstones from the 1810s. Of Irish people, and the quote from him is, I gradually realized that the Italian Americans weren't the first ones here, and other people had been here before us.
Almost like the Native Americans lived there as well.
As I began to understand this, it fascinated me. I kept wondering, how did New York look? What were the people like? How did they walk, eat, work, dress? I just love that. Like, what? This idea that Martin Scorsese is like, whoa, there were people here before me. I better make a film out of that. It's so stupid. Anyway, and then the only other thing I had on here is that post-production was nearly completed in 2001, and the film got delayed for over a year. There were multiple reasons for it. Scorsese has said that they did have to do film some pickups, even going into October 2002. But one of the other reasons is that the September 11 attacks happened.
Right.
And there is a sequence at the end where it like fades to different scenes of New York over the years and ending with New York skyline in 2001 pre 9/11. And they were, a bit worried about people's reactions to that coming out right after 9/11. But then they did. And they considered like having the towers dissolve out from the shot, and then they decided to just keep them in there unaltered. But like, I feel like it would have been way weirder for it to cut to that, fade to that scene with the modern skyline and then just have the towers disappear. That would be awful. That would make it 10 times worse. It's like either don't have them there to begin with, or have them there and leave it at that. You know, if you're, especially your film's coming out in 2002, because otherwise, like, you're making a statement about the two towers when it's supposed to be like showing, you know, oh, here's how the city has continued to build over the years or whatever. So what a weird, what a weird decision for someone in post-production to have to make as well, to be honest. Anyway, that's all the trivia I had taken down.
Fair.
I think the better of these two movies is An American Tale. And I also think that we should, not for the podcast, just for ourselves, just watch Five Will Goes West because it's a fun movie.
Fair enough.
but they do, there is definitely similarities. I know we really went off on tangents in this episode. And talked about a lot of stuff that had nothing to do with the movies, really. I mean, but it did have to do with the central themes of the movies, but just very different. But they do both, they are both making similar points. And they are both kind of drawing from a similar moment in history. And, you know, this concept that, you know, America was seen as like this idealized place for people to go to get away from the problems of their homeland, and then discovering that, you know, the same problems exist over there.
It's also like this, as mentioned in the beginning, this is our 100th episode.
Yeah.
The way these conversations happen is different. The things that I look for in movies has changed.
Yeah.
You know, better or worse, quality of the podcast changes because we are human. We don't have a, you know, massive production, you know, studio and things like that. So if you've been here since, you know, negative, you know, 50 lower, if you've only joined us recently, I want to thank you for sticking with us. or if you've just heard this for the first time, that'd be very bizarre. But if you did enjoy it, please share. If you want more, obviously you can go to our website, ittakes2.co.nz, and you can follow us on social media. I don't think we're very active because I think social media is very much a echo chamber of negativity these days. But if you want to join our mailing list, it's available on our website. But the place where, you know, there is no negativity is, in fact, our Discord, which you can join via the show notes as well.
I'm going to have to get it. We have a meme that we post every now and then, which is the...
how many episodes since we talked about 9/11?
Yeah, how many episodes since we talked about 9/11? it probably would have been quite high before this episode, but is. We are going to have to come out with a zero episode since we talked about 9/11 again, because... it does just come up. It just comes up in these American movies.
Yeah.
Especially movies about New York. I mean, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
At least, you know, we're not saying that anyone in these movies was the cause of 9/11.
Which
is definitely the case in...
that one Muppet movie.
That one Muppet movie where they make it clear that Kermit did
9/11.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. As Nick said, join our Discord if you want to chat to us. And if you enjoyed this episode or any other episodes, just share them. That's the best thing you can do for any podcast that you listen to is share the podcast with someone else who will enjoy it.
Thank you for joining us. Goodbye.
Goodbye.